It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. The drum loop go a little long because a little bit late getting to the program. My sincere apologies for all of that. It is the 30th day of November 2020, the penultimate month of a horrifying year is coming to a close this evening. Hi, I'm Bob, and it's Moran Monday on the horn, and we got some. That's the funny thing about having Moran Monday after a weekend. You always wind up with plenty of material. Yeah. That being the case, we will get into the teeth of that in fairly short order. This program, like every other program on the horn, begins with gratitude. Because we have thanks to send out for folks jumping in. Over the course, our subscribers for the weekend. And what that means is thanks to Joseph, and thank you very kindly to Randy in PA. Thank you to Suman. Thank you to Charlene in Rogues Island. Thank you, Sharon. Thank you all very kindly for being partial sponsors of the program. Thanks as well to Jeremy. Jumping in first past the post this evening. Thank you, Jeremy, in Vermont. And I have a sad note. I got word from our pal Chris in Germany that her beloved four-legged fur baby friend Mike, cat's name is Mike, journeyed across the Rainbow Bridge today. Mike lived a long and happy cat life. He was 17 or 18 years old, so Chris kind of knew it was coming, but it doesn't make it hurt any less. But I got a note, and I had said that we got done with November on Friday. We actually earnestly did. But I got a note from Chris saying, "Hey, can I make a $150 fuck 2020 challenge in Mike's memory?" And I said, absolutely. So, in memory of her beloved feline friend, Mike, Chris has put $150 on the table to get December started in good form. And that would be tremendously helpful. And thank you, Chris. Thank you very kindly. And we're all so sorry. Family is family, whether it has fur or not. And that's just a fact. And so that fuck 2020, the year The Year of Misery challenge is on the table, courtesy of Chris in Germany. Thank you, Chris. Thank you. And we will hopefully do justice to Mike the Cat's memory this evening, with any luck at all. And we're off to a start. There's 125 left on the Fuck 2020 challenge. Mike in Cascadia says, put me down for 25 from this Mike. Thank you, Mike. Thank you very kindly indeed. And so that gets us to a beginning place. A reminder, as usual, if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn Chat Room, well, run on by. Head on .live, click on Chat Room. If you've never been there before, pick out a screen name and a password. It's easy. If you have, just try to remember what it was if you haven't been there in a while. And, yeah, okay. Brother Deacon Asa accusing me of running on cautious politician time. Okay. But run on by the chat room. And if you do jump in, you'll be greeted by Anatole and Jimmy Jam and Lambelaine and Otto DeShot and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky and Terry in Saigon. Good morning, Terry. Good morning, Vietnam. I always wanted to do that. And capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third-stage guild navigator, has indeed folded space today to become Man Cave. Must be nicer there than it is here. Because part of the reason I was late to the microphone is because at about 4:20, it's just how things work out around here, at about 4:20, Agnes looked at me and said, honey, you got to take me down. You got to take me to puppy sit, because Agnes is puppy sitting this week. Grand puppies, and secondly, we've got a winter storm warning out, and it looks as though it's got the potential a couple of inches of snow by morning, they're saying, and possibilities that it's going to snow all week. And oh, let's see. What are the Bob doing the weather? Getting down Wednesday to a low of 19. That'll be like not having walls in this old house. But yeah, it's going to snow on us all evening long, and then it looks to be snowing pretty much all day tomorrow. So we had to go out and get the propane tank swapped out. And so that's what we did. And I took Agnes down for puppy sitting. And, well, that's where we find ourselves. And traditionally, on the final day of the month, I send out thanks to our Patreon subscribers. And I would like nothing more than to be able to do that right now. And for some reason or another, Patreon has done some sort of hateful thing to their interface where I can't just get to an easy-to-access... Ah, there it is. Okay, so now we can do it. Thanks very kindly to Muggles. Thank you, Muggles. And thank you to Rico and DeBerg. Thanks to Wolf River Girl. Thanks to Katie. And thank you to John. Thanks to Jake. Thank you, Steve, a member of the Fraternity of Steve. Thank you, Nancy. Thank you, Jimmy. Thank you, Prince. Thank you, Bernadette. Thanks to Irwin out in Montana. Thanks to Mike in Cascadia. Thank you, Ed. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, John. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you to Oak Farmster. Thank you to Dave number 11. Thank you to Mark. Thank you to Michael of the Guffins. Thank you to Balmer Bob. And Brock, thank you. Thanks to Jeff in Slow. Thank you to James. Thank you, Kay. Thank you, Andrea. Thank you, James. Thank you, Ruth. Thank you to Aaron, Annette, Joanne. Thank you, Lori. Thanks to Alex. Thank you to Albert in North Carolina. Thank you, Joyce. Thank you to Vernon in San Francisco. Or San Diego. Sorry about that, Vernon. Thank you to Glenn. Thank you to Kat in Ohio. Thank you, John. Thank you, Marty. Thank you, Brendan. Thank you, Scott in Wisconsin. Thank you, Barbara. Thank you, Alec. Thank you to the Nubian. Thank you, Carl. Thank you to Steve in New York. Thanks to Barb. Thank you to our old buddy Horst in Taiwan. Thank you, Robin. Thank you, John. Thank you to Terrace in California. Thank you to Frank Fab, author of The Fab Machine that runs this program. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa, and yes, thank you to Jeremy in Vermont. See what I say? There's a lot of people who do a lot of crossover. Patreon, PayPal, a la carte, what have you. Thank you very kindly, each and every one of you who contribute through Patreon. It helps immensely. It knocks out about two programs worth per month. So thank you, one and all. I guess we are officially into the teeth of the holiday season now that Thanksgiving weekend has passed. And, you know, we're downhill. Sweet, merciful, flying spaghetti monster. We're downhill toward the end of the calendar end of 2020. But we all know that 2020 doesn't really end until January 20th, 2021. Because that is when the reign of error will end. And, of course, this, Bob, I've already seen the photograph, by the way. Jeffrey and I went down to Georgia, which is better than the devil doing it, this weekend, and we're glad that we did. We met up with a crew of people in Cobb County in the town of Marietta. That's Marietta. That's Marietta, Joey and Giraffe. And spent most of the day on the corner of Georgia 120 and Whitlock Avenue with our signs. Jeffrey was spectacular as he really stuck his neck out for the cause. Okie dokie. You should have seen Jeffrey at work. He was the hardest working giraffe anywhere on Saturday, at least in North America, I imagine. The lady who spearheaded the group was the one and only Liz Griffith, who ironically was from Ohio, too. She was from Toledo originally, and I told her so was Mike Malloy, who also lives down here in the general area. Speaking of Malloy, it was 2 years to the day that many of us met at the original Malloy retreat on one rainy weekend in the North Georgia mountains. I remember it well. That was a good time, even though it was a sloppy time. But lots of people had a lot of fun. So anyway, our leader Liz told us to take our signs to the northwest corner of Georgia 120 and Whitlock Avenue and make sure we stayed on the sidewalk. Well, no sooner did we walk over to the northwest corner of the street, and there went Jeffrey running right over to the island in the middle of the street. I had to go get him, but once I arrived on the island, I decided to stay there with him because the island was long and we both like, see previous entry, Long Islands. Oh, dear. Jeffrey did a great job, as when people honked with approval of our signs, Jeffrey the giraffe would grab a handful of business cards and give them to the driver of the vehicle. Jeffrey handed out over 100 cards with Vote Ossoff and Warnock. And check out the Bob Kincaid Show at HeadOn.live printed on them. Well, gosh, Joey, that's just sweet. Thanks. Jeffrey was so excited that he slobbered on a couple of Ossoff and Warnock supporters because he had to hand out the cards with his mouth because, well, Jeffrey being a giraffe doesn't have hands. But you still have to hand it to Jeffrey because he was hands-on with his hooves this weekend in Georgia. Oh, man, this just goes on and on. I don't mean the puns, the bad, horrible, terrible puns. Jeffrey and I had a wonderful day supporting the cause on a beautiful day in Georgia. You can see the pictures at Joey Bay on Facebook. I'm the Joey Bay from Rittman, Ohio, just half an hour north of Orville, where Agnes lived as a child. Yes, she really did. I think she was living among the Mennonites at that point in time. On Sunday, Jeffrey met up with Warren Spahn. Wow! Former Hall of Fame pitcher for the Braves. Spahn and Sane in a day of rain. That was the That was the watchword for the Braves back then, because they didn't have a third starter to speak of. Warren Spahn, I'll be darned. Spahn seemed to get a big kick out of it as he raised his right leg and got all wound up over the thought of making a pitch for Warnock and Ossoff. As you know, Spahn was a great lefty who doesn't want these two spawns of Satan, Loeffler and Perdue, to be the next Senators of Georgia. This may turn out to be, this may have to go on Joey and Giraffe's greatest hits reel. More about some morons we encountered on our trip to Georgia tomorrow, but on this day, the last day of November, we lost two great authors. When Oscar Wilde left us in 1900, and the great, wonderful African-American author and philosopher James Baldwin died 87 years later. Also on this day in 1964, the Beatles debuted with their second biggest hit of all time, I Want to Hold Your Hand. They had test-marketed it in Hamburg as Komm gibt mir deine Hand. But ironically, George Harrison would die on this day in 2000. According to sources, Hey Jude was their biggest hit of all time, so Hey Jude, hope you're well in the great Northwest. That insight was from Billable Rick. Some reflections from this past Friday on the front porch. Please tell Steve in New York the guy starved to death in the round barn because he couldn't find a square meal. It had nothing to do with any other shit. As far as A&P is concerned, our local A&P consolidated with Stop and Go, and now we have a hybrid convenience store by the name of Wait For It. A&P and Stop and Go is now Stop and Pee. And soon, FedEx and UPS will become fed up. I think we already are with them. This has been Joey's Journal for Monday, the final day of December, the 30th day, or no, November, let's not hurry things along, the final day of November, the 30th day of November, 2020, with Giraffe in a Georgia state of mind. Georgia, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you to an anonymous friend who just got us down to $100 to go on Chris's Fuck 2020 Mike the Cat's Memorial Challenge. Thank you. Thank you. And the Long Island, Steve in New York, has nominated that pun for a GNIR, which is the reverse of a cowbell ring. It's a gnr, because it was terrible. Long Island's puns. Yes, I know. I know. Let's see. No, we're down 95. 95 to go. On, I neglected to count Jeremy in Vermont's first past the post input. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you, Mike in Cascadia. And thank you to our anonymous friend. And so with me a little bit late, I just looked down at the clock and went, wait, no, there's no way that took 45. No, Bob, you were late. That's all there was to it. But, we got morons. Oh, brother, do we have morons? And we should probably do this in proper fashion. By the way, program note, I will be covering tomorrow evening for Malloy as he's out for he's out for the evening. Be right back on Wednesday, the second day of December. So mark that on your calendar. I guess. I'm looking forward to it. I always get a kick out of covering for Malloy. And our buddy Ron in the far frozen north sent me a graphic that I have since seen several places on social media. And it really captures the mood right now. It's one of those hollow plastic stand-up Santa Clauses on a porch with a string of LED white twinkling lights extending from Santa's crotch over a sign that reads merely 2020, so that it looks like Santa is relieving himself on 2020. And by God, I think that is probably the most apropos, likely to be the most apropos signature of this holiday season. Yeah. But like I said, more in Monday, right? Right. So let's do this right. Right. I'm confused.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. It's Moran Monday on the horn. You will not believe your ears, for behind these thin, cyberdetic veils of canvas reside the worst and the best and the most amazing and revolting of Morans. We've got them all here. Brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles, moms and dads, kitties and cousins, friends and neighbors, we've got them. We've got birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, birchers, baggers, booger eaters, libertardians, maggots, trumpanzees, Republicans all, just waiting for you to listen in shocked horror at their overall moranity. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Just moments ago, you were over on the Carnival Midway, and you were tossing ping-pong balls. Yeah, if those were golf balls, they'd be hell on those goldfish balls. You were tossing goldfish... Still can't do it! You were tossing ping-pong balls at goldfish bowls in the vain hope of taking home a not-exactly-precious little iguana. And, well, just mere steps away, here we have the Moran Monday tent. Remember, subscribers to the Horn keep the Moran Monday tent moving about the country at the ridiculously low rate of less than a half a stick of chewing gum per program. Yes, indeed, it's an absolute fact. It costs you. It's a quarter. Keep trying to come up with ways to show just how low this is. It's a quarter of a chicken strip from Dairy Queen off the $2 for $4 menu. A quarter, that's not even a bite. And I don't think you get the gravy with it either. No. But that's what the Moran Monday patronage parts with each and every month. And a reminder, as you queue up to go through the flap to the Moran Monday, into the Moran Monday tent, keep a close watch on watches, wallets, purses, rings, bracelets, necklaces, piercing jewelry, children, small animals, even that iguana you somehow won throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls. Got it right on the first pass this time. And even European style messenger bags, because the Morans can get grabby. Hear, hear. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. And yes, indeed, you will. And we'll start with something that our pal Haley in Arkansas pointed out to me over the weekend. Let me introduce you to Dr. David Samadi. Yeah, you might want to get the hockey puck. David Samadi is apparently a right-wing POS. Oh, wait, I earned a cowbell? Bob, says Jeremy in Vermont, you've earned a cowbell because English is hard, and you slipped up with grace and gave me a laugh doing it. Well, I am glad to have done so. Thank you for the cowbell. Back to Dr. David Samadi, M.D. I think M.D. in this case stands for Moran Dumbass. It was 6:55 p.m. 2 days ago, the 28th day of November 2020, when Dr. David Samadi, M.D., Moran Dumbass, Mega Dipshit, MAGA Dipshit, was overcome by waves of MAGA stupidity and ran to his nearest device to publish the following tweet. And, you know, the hockey puck isn't so much because this is funny or no, or ridiculous or ludicrous. This is just to keep the neighbors from calling a welfare check on you when you start when you start howling obscenities because of just how nasty this tweet is. Dr. David Samadi, MAGA dipshit, tweeted, 5 years from now, you will look back and admit that you spent an entire year of your life wearing a mask, cooped up in your house, and avoiding all the people you love. A year in your life that you'll never get back. A year in your life that you'll never get back. You know, because we've talked about the finite nature of our lives. And that's why I'm so grateful for everybody who shares the precious finite time of their existence joining in this ongoing nearly two decades long conversation. Time spent is spent forever. But in the case of Dr. David Samadi, and I wonder if this guy could put a Band-Aid on somebody without killing him. In the case of Dr. David Samadi, MAGA dumbass, it takes a special, a really low, special kind of disdain for the suffering of others to be a physician, allegedly, and casually dismiss the deaths of north of 265,000 people in this country. I know the Republicans are constantly grunting and moaning about cancel culture, but honest to Pete, you know, the Hippocratic Oath, which supposedly is still somewhat controlling in the medical profession, it has no force of law, but it is supposed to be the motivating factor the first rule of the Hippocratic Oath is first do no harm. So, for instance, when COVID Caligula suggested that he wanted us to put ultraviolet butt plugs up our posteriors to kill the virus or do some chlorine bleach shooters, he was violating the first tenet of the Hippocratic Oath. But then again, COVID Caligula couldn't spell Hippocratic.
Hippopotamus what?
If you spotted in the H, the I, one of the two P's, and the O and the C and the R and the A and the T and the I and the C, and he only had to fill in the other P, which you'd think, given who he is, diaper Don, wouldn't be that problematic, you know, coming up with an extra P. But it is, and he's not a doctor, so it doesn't apply to him, so he can tell the MAGAs to go out there and use fish tank cleaner to prevent the Rona and kill off a MAGA in Arizona stand, you might recall. And Brother Deacon Asa informs me, MD, Maximum Dultus, Maximus Dultus. Well, going for the Latin, are we? Nice. By the way, Dr. David Samadi is one of those not-so-rare maggot Iranian Americans. The cognitive dissonance is mind-numbing. We're talking about a guy who comes from a culture that was actually doing medicine before the Greeks stopped, you know, peeing on wounds. The ancient Persian culture is, well, it's ancient for starters, but brilliant as well. These are the people who also, as I noted earlier, I think last week, invented the wind turbine. Mm-hmm. And pants. Yes, pants. Because most of the world was running around in dresses back then. But I gave pride of place to Dr. David Samadi, MAGA dumbass. Because Haley jumped in nice and early with this, and it was unavoidable. And then other people started checking in on Dr. Samadi. It turns out Dr. Samadi, according to a document from justice.gov, specifically, defendants would schedule Samadi to perform two separate surgeries, one endoscopic and one robotic, at the same exact time. During the course of the two surgeries, a medical resident would remain with the patient undergoing an endoscopic procedure or operation. Meanwhile, Samadi himself would travel back and forth between the endoscopic room and an adjacent operating room in which Samadi conducted high-risk, complex surgeries utilizing a surgical robot. I think the brand name for that bot is Da Vinci. This practice not only violated Medicare law, it also violated Northwell's own resident supervision policy, that's the hospital group, and it resulted in defendants' submission of false claims. Moreover, Samadi's patients were never informed that their surgeries were scheduled to overlap with another of Samadi's scheduled surgeries. During much of the covered period, Samadi performed surgical operations and procedures at Lenox Hill, which is in New York, in the following manner. He performed procedures in two operating rooms, OR-21 and OR-25, and sequenced the order of procedures such that portions of procedures performed in OR-21 overlapped with procedures performed at OR-25, and vice versa. During the portions of OR-21 and OR-25 procedures that overlapped, Samadi generally performed complex robotic surgical procedures in OR-25, and residents assigned to be supervised by Samadi performed endoscopic operations and procedures in OR-21. Samadi rarely designated another attending urologist to assist in OR-21 for the portions of the procedure from which Samadi himself was absent because of his participation in another surgical procedure occurring in OR, I think we see a pattern emerging now, 25. In instances where Samadi stepped away from a procedure in OR-25 to supervise a procedure in OR-21, Samadi would freeze or pause the robotic equipment in OR-25 and leave the patient under the care of the anesthesiologist, operating room staff, and in some instances a urology resident. That's somebody who's studying urology and is still, this is almost as bad as what Jeffrey and Joey do, wet behind the ears. Oh, dear, 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 dear. No other attending urologist was present in OR-25 for the portion of the time that Samadi was absent, even though the surgery had not yet concluded. Samadi also did not inform any other attending urologist of the specific times during a surgery when he was absent from OR-25. It was not Samadi's personal practice to inform his patients when their surgeries were scheduled to overlap with another of Samadi's scheduled surgeries. He performed cystograms and cystoscopies on patients in OR-21 in certain instances when it was not medically necessary to perform these procedures in an operating room setting. Lenox Hill submitted to Medicare claims for payment associated with the services rendered by operating room staff in conjunction with these procedures. So that's the really, really classy guy from the lawsuit brought by the Southern District of New York against David B. Samadi, M.D., David B. Samadi, M.D., P.C., Lenox Hill Hospital, and Northwell Health, Inc. And this is the guy who says that you're all going to feel stupid because you did everything in your power not to die from a deadly virus and you took scientific consensus seriously. They're a deadly lot, these maggots. So, you know, it's a starting place. 265,000 plus dead people in the United States of America, just here, not counting India, Brazil, Italy that's resurging. No, just here. Just here. But David Samadi, M.D., MAGA dumbass, he doesn't give a shit about those 265,000 dead because, well, they're not him, and he's got his, and F you all. F us all.
Right.
Because MAGA. I mean, that really, I was surprised that it was Northwell Health and David Samadi PC, because that sounds like the kind of grift that, well, I don't know, COVID Caligula would set up if they'd let him open a medical office. But more and more and more, it's sounding like his next grift is going to be something to do with white-wing media. Because once again, I heard earlier today that he's got his eyes set on Newsmax TV. Now, if you're talking about right-wing TV operations, well, you got your Fox there. And then you got your Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground. And you got the Beckerheads Blaze. I think it's still teetering on the brink of survival. Then you got Newsmax TV. And, you know, long, long ago, Newsmuck started out as a crappy little website run by what were then, before we had the term maggots, it was a bunch of Bushies and assorted malcontent teabaggers in the lot. I mean, they go way back to the beginning of the century. But they really hit overdrive when the teabagger movement got started. And now they're actually competing in a sort of tinfoil hat kind of way with Onan for second place. And COVID Caligula has designs on it, even though the head of Newsmax has said, well, he can't have it. I mean, hell, we're talking about money now, you know, the folding kind, the Jed Clampett walking around kind of money. And see, they were fabulously financed by the right wing, because the right wing doesn't give a damn where it puts its money as long as it's getting the message out. You know, they never ask for a close accounting of the paperclip budget. They just throw the money out there and say, spend it as you wish. Just make sure you spread toxic right-wing bullshit morning, noon, and night. That's how that works. Yeah. But not, no, not on our side. Which brings me to another bit of moranity. Let me go back to a thank you. Thank you to Arnold in PA. Arnold has taken us down to $75 to go on Chris in Germany's Fuck 2020 memorial challenge in memory of Mike the Cat. Thank you again, Chris, and thank you, Arnold. So $75 and that challenge is met, and that's wonderful. Thank you. As for Northwell, Steve in New York says, MD, mother sucker, right, but adds, we're actually bringing a class action against them, Northwell. Good luck, and I hope you clean their clocks, Steve. Lee in New York, as to Hippocratic, stop it, Bob. Peter Potimus never took the Hippocratic Oath. Potimus, all caps, P-O-T, and the U-S, never took the Hippocratic Oath. Second, he does not care about oaths. He took one on January 20th, 2017. That one didn't matter to him either. Look how that turned out.
American carnage.
And Newsmax, Trump can't buy it. You cannot purchase it for chump change. He doesn't. But remember, he's getting a look. He spent $3 million. It turns out it was more than $27,000 per vote. The cost went up because the votes went down. It was something like 84 votes last I heard in Wisconsin. And so he was spending, yeah, way north of a good bit north of $30,000 to lose worse again some more. Ha! What a maroon. Yeah. Thank you to Ralphs jumping in on Mike's Memorial Challenge, courtesy of Chris in Germany. Thank you. That's 65 to go. Thank you, Ralphs.
And Silent R. Lamar says, please share. Mr. Bob, ooh, Bob, question. If we were to remove the earplugs from Dr. What-the-fuck's ears, could the smoke they're pumping up his ass be released through them? It very likely, and you don't want to be in the room when that happens. No, not at all. Not at all. And so, as you see, we are off to a fairly rousing start on this Moran Monday. And we've got, and I hate it when we have Moranity from our side. Over the course of the weekend, the Biden team announced more nominations, more names for who they will put in place. He will, for instance, have the first ever all-female comms team. The women, the people leading the White House communications shop will all be women. And I think six of them are moms of young children. So that shows a commitment on Biden's part to follow through on promises that he made that America will look, that his administration will look like America looks. We're going to have America's first woman of color in a critical cabinet position. The first African man, child of immigrants, will be second in command at the Department of the Treasury under the first female Treasurer of the United States, Janet Yellen. And then this, the Office of Management and Budget. Now, remember, when it comes to the Office of Management and Budget, of late, that office has been headed by, among other people, Mick Mulvaney of South Carolina, who probably can't count past 10 without taking off his shoes. But the person that Joe Biden has tapped for OMB is causing massive amounts of grunting and howling and barking and shrieking among the maggot right wing. Because Joe Biden selected Neera Tanden. Neera Tanden is a woman of color. Neera Tanden is the daughter of immigrants. She is of Indian origin. And it's not funny, but it's at least notable how 4 years of Donald Trump has created a knee-jerk response inside the Republican Party such that they feel compelled to shit on virtually any woman, especially a woman of color, who is brought up for consideration for a serious post. And so, lo and behold, out of John Cornholio's office, and remember, John Cornholio was maggot, 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 and then toward the end of the campaign season, when it looked like his maggotry might cost him his Senate seat to M.J. Hager in Texas, suddenly he started putting a little distance between him and Trump, talking, well, you know, I don't always agree with everything Donald Trump does, but I've been there for you. You know, if by you we mean some godforsaken oil company in Texas. Right. And Drew Brandewee, who's the comms spokescreep for John Cornholio, said, Neera Tanden, who has an endless stream of disparaging comments about the Republican senators whose votes she'll need, stands zero chance of being confirmed. How about that? Don't want no brown woman there running our budget. Next thing you know, there won't be no money for the white pipples. Yeah, right. And Neera Tanden has used her Twitter feed to zing the maggots and to zing maggot senators. By far and away, far more cleverly and intelligently than anything that the right wing has to offer. The former chief of staff to chinless Mitch McConnell said that Neera Tanden's nomination is a sacrifice to the confirmation gods. That's Josh Holmes, not John Holmes, Josh Holmes. Still apparently a big dick.
You dick!
Yeah, you see what we try here. We try. But the part that really gets the Moran nomination is the response from the Sparkle Fart-propelled Unicorn Cavalry Purity Patrol. Because someone that nobody really needed to hear from, namely Brianna Joy Gray. Remember her? She voted for Jill Stein in 2016. So, you know, consider her opinion as flowing from that. She said, everything toxic about the corporate Democratic Party is embodied in Neera Tanden. Really? Everything? Every last thing? Molecules? Subatomic particles? I mean, everything, Bree? Everything. Because Bree is still butthurt about 2016, because no matter how many times you explain the numbers, no matter how many times you point out the realities, Bree is still part of that butthurt contingent who think that Neera Tanden collaborated and conspired with Hillary Clinton to steal the primary from Bernie Sanders in 2016. Of course, kind of like nitwit Nero's lawsuits that he keeps filing and keeps getting bounced out of court. There's no evidence for that. So take her for what she's worth. And, well, I'll leave it at that. But, you know, Jesus. Here we are. We're not even out of 2020 yet. And, well, the Purity Patrol is already hard at work before anybody has exercised the first iota of power. Now, I will say this, and I find this much more troubling than Brianna Joy Gray's paranoid fantasies. She voted for Jill Stein, remember? And bragged about it. I just voted for Jill fucking Stein, that's right. Oh, it's still out there. You can go find it. This is a truth about Neera Tanden, and I find it disturbing. She runs the Center for American Progress. And that is a think tank that's been around for, the better part of this century. And it was created as a response to all the think tanks that exist out there, the wingnut welfare shops, that constantly pump out a steady stream of bilious right-wing horse shit. Like, for instance, because I just happen to have one here, Americans for Limited Government, for immediate release. Americans for Limited Government started out in the teabag era, and once again, they're a right-wing organization, so they've got all the money they could ever want, and they can just go on sharing bilious crap until the end of time. Dateline Fairfax, Virginia. Americans for Limited Government President Rick Manning today issued the following statement. Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger has an affirmative responsibility to ensure that the Georgia election results reflect the actual legal votes cast in Georgia for the presidential race. There is no way to certify the results without allowing signature verification on mail-in absentee ballots in accordance with state law. In March, Raffensperger's office entered into a consent decree that effectively nullified the ability to determine fraudulently filed mail-in ballots. Absentee ballots. But now we call them
mail-in ballots because we've had so many months of Nitwit Nero complaining about the mail-in ballots. They're all fraudulent. They're all dirty. They're illegal. They're not good unless they're being done, like, by me, my daughter, and my entire staff, and in Florida.
Remember, Brad Raffensperger has pointed out that Nitwit Nero probably lost Georgia because of the number of maggot Georgians who didn't vote in the November election but voted in the primary by what? Yes, mail-in absentee ballot. So they weren't willing to die for him.
But given the massive increase in mail-in ballots from 2020 compared to 2016, it is reasonable for the Georgia government to follow the written law in order to make certain that the COVID emergency was not used as a pretense for voter fraud, because, you know, that's what you'd do. You'd use a pandemic as a reason for voter fraud
in a state that's gerrymandered within an inch of its life, where the entire gubernatorial election in 2018 was decided because of voter suppression initiated by then Secretary of State Brian Kemp. But right. And that consent decree, well, birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, maggots, the libertarians, trumpanzees, Republicans of Americans for Limited Government, and they kind of glossed over that phrase, consent decree, because consent decree is a word or a phrase that has meaning. A consent decree isn't something that you enter into, say, with your next door neighbor, unless your next door neighbor has somehow managed to involve you in litigation with the federal government. Because that's really kind of the key to having a consent decree. You've been sued by the federal government for doing something dodgy and illegal. And in March, Georgia got caught doing something, or before March of this year, they got caught doing something dirty and illegal. They got caught engaging in voter suppression and using sketchy signature so-called verification of absentee ballots. For instance, Georgia agreed when a timely absentee ballot is rejected, the Board of Registrars or absentee ballot clerk shall send the elector notice of such rejection and opportunity to cure by mailing written notice and attempt to notify the elector by telephone and by email if a phone number or email is in the elector's voter registration record no later than the close of business on the third business day after receiving the absentee ballot. So they can't just throw the ballot out. Also in the consent decree, Secretary of State Raffensperger, in his official capacity as Secretary of State, agrees to issue an official election bulletin containing the following procedure applicable to the review of signatures on absentee ballot envelopes by county elections officials and to incorporate the procedure below in training materials regarding the review of absentee ballot signatures for county registrars. County registrars and absentee ballot clerks are required upon receipt of each mail-in ballot absentee ballot to compare the signature or mark of the elector in the mail-in absentee ballot envelope with the signatures or marks in eNet and on the application for the mail-in absentee ballot. If the signature does not appear to be valid, registrars and clerks are required to follow the procedure set forth, yada yada. When reviewing an elector's signature on the mail-in absentee ballot envelope, the registrar or clerk must compare the signature on the mail-in absentee voter registration record in eNet and the elector's signature on the application for the mail-in absentee ballot. And it sets forth the entire process and says a mail-in absentee ballot shall not be rejected unless a majority of the registrars, deputy registrars, or absentee ballot clerks reviewing the signature agree that the signature does not match any of the voter's signatures on file in eNet or on the absentee ballot application. If a determination is made that the elector's signature on the mail-in absentee ballot envelope does not match, the registrar or absentee ballot clerk shall write the names of the three elections officials who conducted the signature review across the face of the absentee ballot envelope, which shall be in addition to writing rejected and the reason for the rejected for the rejection as required under Georgia law. Then the registrar or absentee ballot clerk shall commence the notification procedure set forth. Not exactly the kind of voter suppression they were hoping for in Georgia, but then again, they got themselves in deep shit with the federal government. And remember, this is the maggot federal government. This is the Trump administration DOJ. This is Bill Barr to prosecution. Pepe the Frog, Attorney General Pepe the Frog. But meanwhile, the folks at Americans for Limited Government said, while we recognize that the consent decree was agreed to under stressful times, there's something about being sued by the federal government that's kind of stressful, it is clear that the interest of the people of the state of Georgia demands signature verification with 100% scrutiny from both political parties to put concerns about the election's outcome to rest. Well, what this boils down to, and this is something that I was talking about earlier, this boils down to Republicans in Georgia wanting to use the same filthy tactics that were used in South Carolina, Stan, to save Lindsey Graham, to save two Senate seats. Because what this is all about, as Lou reminds us, what this is all about is the January 5th special runoff elections between Raphael Warnock and Kelly Attila the Hun Leffler and John Ossoff and David Debate Chicken Perdue. That is exactly what it's all about. So consider it in that light. Because they're beginning to get really nervous. Among other things, Nitwit Nero has already planned at least one trip to campaign for Ossoff, or for well, he'll probably will be campaigning for Ossoff and Warnock in a sort of backhanded fashion, but to campaign for Leffler and David Debate Chicken Perdue. And we all know how that's going to go. Anytime he goes to campaign for another candidate, it winds up, because, you know, he's a toxic narcissist and at least a sociopath, quite possibly at this point a psychopath. We know there have been reports of him raging and losing coherence, even, in addition to bowel control, in the White House since the election. He's pissed. And so it's entirely possible that he may go to Georgia and do more good for Warnock and Ossoff than you know, the combined effect of Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Barack Obama, and maybe, well, I don't know, Michelle Obama. Also, she might actually have more force and effect, but you get my point. And so, if he should, you know, there's 36 days. There's 36 days till that special runoff election on January the 5th. And if, in fact, he goes down once, we can sort of hope he'll go down maybe once a week. I mean, that would be five trips down to Georgia. And he can, this feels a little bit ugly, but the reality is what the reality is. And he'll hold his MAGA rallies, and MAGA will probably show up with extreme prejudice. And they'll LARP and smollock and grabulate and lollygag and bark and growl and hoot and grunt and MAGA all over each other. And then they'll go, and some of them will come down with the Rona. And some of them will die. Because that's the way the pandemic works. Because they've already demonstrated to us their willingness to die for their own stupidity based on how they handled the Thanksgiving holiday. Dr. Anthony Fauci over the weekend warning that there will be a surge on a surge out of the stupid choices made by people traveling on this holiday weekend. And it is just, it's on the one hand heartrending, but when we've watched this behavior go on for 8 long months, at what point in time does the ability, because I've heard a lot over the last few days about pandemic fatigue, and even the people who are being careful are dropping their guard a little bit. I hope none of us are doing that. But I catch myself a couple of times this weekend. Got out of the car, went sashaying into the, and went, oh, damn it, and turned around and walked back and got the mask. At the same time, yelling at myself, what am I thinking? We're all capable of it. But that's fatigue. And we can overcome that just with mindfulness. But the willful stupidity that attends risk-taking behavior that you did not even have to do. People do. There are places, I live in one of them, where you can't get your groceries delivered. You have to roll the dice and go out. And so there's no way around it. But I don't have to get on a plane and fly halfway across the country and then be surprised when it turns out that Gammy and Gampy wind up going, and then the next thing you know, you're not going to their funeral because you can't do that because of the pandemic. Damn. So we're not smarter than that. But wow, that was a hell of a digression. Back to Neera Tanden for a minute. There's no doubt that the woman is brilliant. There is no doubt that she is capable. What I worry about, because there's a strong commitment to labor inside this Biden administration, he got ringing endorsements, and the thing about ringing endorsements is you have to follow through. A ringing endorsement from labor means that you got to speak up for labor. And while Neera Tanden has not been nominated as Secretary of Labor, while at the Center for American Progress, and this just happened in the last couple of years, they produced excellent content.
they did great work on climate change. Gender issues, LGBTQIA plus issues. And politics, progressive politics in general. And then the staff decided to organize. And they formed a union. And the next thing you know, Think Progress got shut down. For instance, I just went to thinkprogress.org, and every one of the stories I'm looking at, and there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, there are 12 on the page that I have in front of me, is dated either September 4th or September 5th, 2019. Because Think Progress would rather have shut down than pay a fair and living wage to the people producing the content for it. Now that is troubling. And Neera Tanden was at the helm when they screwed over all of those talented reporters and sent them packing. And I don't, you know, the choices Joe Biden makes are his to make. But I am disturbed by her by Neera Tanden's very clear, plainly obvious anti-labor bias. And you're not going to have perfect agreement inside any cabinet. But the Office of Management and Budget, it touches just about every penny. Well, they do. Every penny that comes through the executive branch, OMB, has a hand in it. And so the question arises, what will the impact be of someone who is decidedly against organized labor relative to how the executive branch allocates its funding? Neera Tanden has also earned the ire of the left. What left? In terms of Medicare for All, because at some point in time she came out opposed to Medicare for All. And that's one of those situations where people of good faith can disagree. But it got her savaged. Me? And I think I speak with a little bit of authenticity in this, because I'm among those millions of Americans who can't get Medicaid and can't get for-profit insurance. And so I say, I don't care what you call it. Medicare for All, public option. How about, hey, Medicaid for All? Don't give it a name at all. Really, there's no need to, because the right wing, you know, the think tanks that they have, like Americans for Limited Government, or various and sundry institutes named after creepy old Romans or whatever. They'll name it for us. And frankly, whatever it is, it will be total absolute communism, socialist Rosicrucian fascism, Bohemian Grove, Illuminati's, Comet Ping Pong Pizza Care. I mean, you know they will. So endorsements of her are rolling out from Democratic senators who are trying to be good soldiers. Senator Cory Booker said, "I've known her for over two decades. She's brilliant and laser-focused on making our country a fairer place for all." You know, unless you were a union worker at Think Progress. Sherrod Brown of Ohio, beloved of the labor movement, said Neera Tanden is smart, experienced, and qualified for the position of OMB director. And added, "The American people decisively voted for change. Mitch McConnell shouldn't block us from having a functioning government that gets to work for the people we serve." Which leads me to a note that I got from James in Illinois. Confirmed? We don't have no confirmation. We don't need no confirmation. We don't need no stinking confirmation. What did Donnie say?
I like acting.
And he didn't mean like, you know, in the WWE. He meant acting OMB director, acting Secretary of Defense, acting this, acting that. And that will be, that probably will be one of the upshots of all of this. If we have a recalcitrant Senate, then they'll all just be acting. And so, you know, I guess they get an asterisk or something like that. But it's still hateful because it's another, step away from constitutional governance. It's another step away from the Constitution functioning as it was supposed to function. Advice and consent in terms of the language about the Senate's role in the confirmation process does not mean advice and permission. The role of Senate Majority Leader as it is being exercised by Chinless Mitch is not the way it was intended to work by the framers of the Constitution. Look at me being all originalist and stuff. He is exercising tyrannical power, pure and simple, and trying to run the presidency from the office of the Senate Majority Leader. A note coming in from Darlene in Connecticut. Oh, God, Neera Tanden. And you thought Amy Coney Barrett had an annoying voice. Neera tops her on that. LOL and yuck. We're talking sharp nails on a chalkboard, and I just shivered, Darlene. Thanks for that. And it's not because it's all of 55 degrees in the studio. Darlene says, apparently Republicans don't like her, but for other reasons, of course, i.e. her disparaging remarks about her, or about them. I guess she's somewhat of a Twitter addict. Oh, she tweets. She tweets, and she tweets it with a DGAF attitude. Yeah, there we go. Stephen New York's in the spirit of the times. Yeah, whatever they come up with, the Republican Party will probably call it Stalin Care. Yeah. Lenin Care. Wait, why not? Just go for that. Hitler Care. Sure. Why? Because they are who they are. What's that, Bill, in PA? Oh, Bill says you get a cowbell for Americans for limited government. Thank you. I'll take every one I can get. Silent R. Lamar, on the other hand, says, here we go, Bob.
Let's name the new health care program. Just take your ass over to the corner and die like a Republican. Ooh. Or like the Republicans want you to. Remember, Alan Grayson said the Republican health care plan is don't get sick, and if you do, die quickly. And he has yet to be proven wrong. Lee in New York says, Americans for limited government? Poor math. There is no unlimited government. That is true. That is logically true. So, and now at, like I said, 30 minutes late to the mic, but we're well over an hour into the program, and somebody's on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Happy Monday to you too, Bob. It's me, Reggie from the King of Georgia, coming at you once again, man.
Hey, Reggie, you know, I've noticed something strange. I don't know what kind of phone I don't know what kind of phone you're using, but you only come through on one channel of it. So you're like you're like in everybody's left ear.
Oh, I'm on my cell phone, Bob.
Huh.
Yeah, but I just wanted to say, is it me or did Joe Biden pick Neera Tanden to be for one of his picks?
Yeah, I just spent the last 45 minutes talking about that.
Yeah, I wonder, do you think he made the right or the wrong choice or move to pick her?
It's not my business to opine on this. It's his cabinet to pick. He got elected president.
Right. And I forgot to mention, go ahead, Bob.
Well, she's clearly qualified to run the Office of Management and Budget.
Yeah.
So, and you know, maybe he chose her just to watch the maggots hop up and down and scream and hunt and groot, or scream and hoot and grunt. Hunt and groot. Wow.
Right. Right. Speaking of which, why are they still fucking with AOC? I forgot to bring that up last week.
You know, because she lives rent free in their heads. Doing it. Pardon?
Right. This time it was Nikki Haley.
Well,
this time it was Nikki Haley who was
Nimrata Haley does not want to get in a battle of wits with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, because it would be like Nikki Haley bringing a rubber sword to a howitzer battle. Nikki Haley is not an intelligent woman. Sorry, she just isn't.
Yeah. Why do you say that, Bob?
I think I've made it clear on this program for years now why that is. I mean, there's evidence. You know, this is evidence-based broadcasting.
Yeah. Now, how did she become governor of South Carolina, or former governor of South Carolina?
Because South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's South Carolina.
Right, and then he got picked by you know who, as something. Maybe her position will be gone after he's gone from the White House next year. Maybe not. You know, like you say, she's not an intelligent person. You know.
No, but she is the dream of the Republican Party for someday being their first female nominee for president.
Right. Which will never happen.
No. Iwanka is going to be that.
Right. Uh-oh.
I know. Ouch.
Another Trump. Yeah, another Trump who shouldn't be there. Another Trump who shouldn't be there. You know.
You're not under the impression that that the maggots or the Trump family are just going to go away. I mean, look at the money they've made off being off of president for the last 4 years. That is a huge grift.
Ooh.
There's money to be made.
In the millions of, oh my goodness!
They're hustlers and grifters.
Money to be made. Right. And that's all they can do because they have no real job or lives in between them. But what, they making millions of dollars off this man? Or am I wrong?
No. They've made a mint off of the presidency. Every time, I mean, think about it. Every time a Secret Service detail has had to stay at Mar-a-Lago to in order to protect the president, you know, their oath-bound duty, we the people have had to pay full rate at Mar-a-Lago for them to have a room to stay in.
Well, that's neither fair nor right, but yeah.
And it ought not be legal.
Exactly. I thought it wasn't legal. I thought it wasn't legal.
Yeah. Might have been once upon a time in a different America.
Yeah. Well, it has to be reinstated again. And some of these laws have to change. We'll go back to the way it was before he became president. Well, in order for that to happen, we have to, have to be fully democratic again. You know what I'm saying, Bob?
Yeah, I do. And you're asking about 40% of the country to do something that they don't even like. The maggots don't like democracy, Reggie.
Right. Right. No, they don't, but that's far way too damn bad for them, because the rest of us, including the whole entire world itself, does and do. I mean, hopefully a future President Biden gets in there. Once he fully, officially, and finally and truly gets in there, maybe all that'll change. Or is that just wishful thinking on my part?
No, what'll happen? He will take his 4 years, and he will do what Democrats always do in the White House, and that is to right the ship of state and try to rehabilitate the Treasury and fill the coffers back up, so that a Republican can come along and steal it all over again.
Right, that's unfortunate for politics, isn't it, Bob?
Well, I mean, that's what happened. We had a budget surplus. We were out of the red at the end of Bill Clinton's term. Say whatever you want to about Bill Clinton, but we were. And then W comes along, and the Republicans hoover out the Treasury.
Right. And then after
Barack Obama got us back on track, and another group of vandals entered the White House in 2016.
Right. And now it's Joe Biden's turn to upright that ship once again, get it back on course. And who do you think will come along after him to try to sink us like the Titanic all over once again?
Kind of too early to guess, but I mean, you've got some hopefuls out there. I mean, there's always, I don't know, Jeb's not too old. Jeb Bush.
Right.
But then there's Ben Sasse, that new and different kind of Republican, who turns out to be just like the old no difference Republicans. You got Tom Cotton down in Arkansas, who thinks he'd be a real good president, and he could say he can talk to the maggots.
Right.
And you got Nimrata Haley.
Oh, right. Of course. The one who tries to fight AOC only to get chewed up and spit out like a piece of fat from a T-bone steak. Right, Bob?
Right. Yeah. Don't leave out Precious Princess Iwanka, my daddy Trump Kushner.
Right. Right. Don't they know that she's a native New Yorker that you don't fuck with? She's from the Bronx, I've heard. You don't fuck with people from the Bronx.
Nah, she's from Jamaica, Queens.
Yeah, either way. Well, you don't fuck with a native New Yorker, right? They don't know how to handle her. So
nobody in New York likes her. They're going to have to. I've read stories where she and Jared are going to try to go back and mingle back into polite New York society. And none of polite New York society wants anything to do with them. you know, maybe some of the maybe right. some of the some of the real estate grifters and some of the nouveau riche, but the old New York money is like, oh no, darling, please, not them.
They're going to try to kick her out of New York, or kick her and her husband out, and a kid too.
Well, remember, as long as she, as long as she's in, as long as she's in New York, she is within the reach of the long arm of the Southern District of New York and the Manhattan Prosecutor's Office.
Right, right. Well, he should be prosecuted for all the laws he's broken. Shouldn't he, Bob? You know.
Well, that's for the lawyers to determine.
Right, right. But we just gotta hope that, that you know that you don't get a, you don't get yet another Republican president. Although, as you said, that'll probably happen or not.
Well, I think we got the cart. We've got the cart out in front of the horse by about a mile and a half. Because right. we've got to worry. Well, how about that? You're back in both channels now. That's amazing.
Okay, Bob. Go ahead.
But you know we've got to get this administration on its feet. Then we've got midterm elections in 2022 to worry about before we ever get to 2024.
Yeah. Right.
Well, so there's all that. Reggie, somebody else is trying to get into the program, and so I want to give him an opportunity. So you and I will talk soon, okay, buddy?
All right, Bob. How was your Thanksgiving last week?
It was nice. It was simple, but it was nice. And more importantly, it was simply delicious.
Yeah, I was quiet.
And that's what and you know, the smart people were having quiet Thanksgiving.
Yeah, like us. I hope Christmas is the exact same way. Well, that New Year's, you know.
Well, thank
I hope
you.
Christmas and New Year's are the exact same way.
They better be, but as it is now, there will be no small number of Americans holding funerals at Christmas because they just couldn't help it. They had to have a big family get together like they have every Thanksgiving.
Right. These are stupid maggots, man. Real stupid maggots.
Dangerous, you know? Dangerous too.
Yeah, dangerous. Yeah, they're very dangerous. Can't they wait until the vaccines come out before they can go back to normal? You know, they have to be tested first.
No, because they don't believe it. No, Reggie, because they don't believe it in the first place. Let me see who we've got here on this on this next line. I'll talk to you later, Reggie. Take care.
All right. All right, Bob. Stay dry.
Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, is this the one and only Bob Kincaid?
This is.
Hey. Hi, this is John from North Dakota.
Hey, John, how are you? I thought of you earlier when I mentioned your name on the Patreon roll of honor.
Yay! All right, cool. Thank you, Bob. Appreciate it. I had some time today to kind of give you a holler and introduce myself to the foreign family congregation community, as it were. Let's see, what do you need to know? Like yourself, I'm the same age as you, by the way. Just to give you a heads up. So,
yeah,
and I
so.
Also spent some time in radio myself. Yeah, spent some time in radio, small market, but still got to actually worked at the same radio station twice. First time around with carts and reel to reels. Second time around, they had the computers already. This was about, I'd say, about a decade later. Same station, Eastern Oregon. Ended up using the computers, cool edit, all that sort of stuff, which was much nicer.
Beats the hell out of a piece of quarter inch tape and a little aluminum block and a razor blade, doesn't it?
Boy, ain't that the truth. Yeah, but I got pretty good at it after a while. So it's but yeah, you're right. Yeah, little electronic stuff is a lot better. Also, just to give a little background, I'm in the Fargo area and I substitute teach. So the kids around here, they're, in fact, today in one of the schools that I substitute in, all the kids came back, elementary. So they're doing the opposite of pretty much what everybody else is doing. Most of them are doing like hybrid or even just distance learning.
Well, when you like said you when you said you substitute teach in North Dakota, John, I immediately thought, Jesus Christ, that's like being in Malmedy about this time in 1944.
Yeah,
dangerous, kind of, dangerous, kind of like and deadly.
This is true. This is true. However, everybody's masked up. They social distance. They've got all that. They've all got all that stuff down. But compared to, say, Minnesota, who's mostly there's like maybe less than maybe about 10% of the districts that are actually doing hybrid. Most of them are doing distance. No, they're going full speed ahead with the kids, and eventually they're going to get middle and high school later on. Probably after the first of the year. Even though we have some of the highest numbers in the country, even though we're supposedly they're dipping down a little bit, but not by much. And on top of that, we're a, big maggoty state as well. You know, the big R runs everything around here. Not to mention, now once in a while, I know Kurt from Grand Forks called in once in a while, and I do hear him once in a while. He kind of fills you on what's going on here. I've noticed. and there's this politically.
Yeah, I know. It's a wasteland. It makes every day an adventure, doesn't it?
It can. I mean, it's more so an adventure in South Dakota where they just don't seem to care at all. Like, give me a couple examples. There's a huge health concern called Sanford. It's an upper Midwest thing. It's a big hospital chain in the upper Midwest. Okay, their CEO recently said, this is a paraphrase. I had COVID and I don't have to wear a mask. Well, needless to say, a few days later, he lost his job because the PR nightmare was huge. Okay, this is some of the things that are going on here. And this is the CEO of a huge, huge healthcare company. Nope, now he's out of a job. Somebody else, had to go in there right away, right? Yeah. That happened. And of course, if you're, members of the Horn Congregation community want to, click and find out about some of the things going on in this crazy state, other than COVID, one of the big issues, I mean, even bigger than COVID itself, is the fact that there was an election in a state house seat about election time. And to give you an idea, not only is the governor, this is kind of a little background. The governor is not, let's just say he's not exactly popular in certain circles within his own party. So the legislature this year is going to be really interesting. And I'll tell you what happened. There was a race for a state house seat here in North Dakota. During the primary, the guy who had the seat got primaried out partially by Doug Burgum and his pack, by Governor Burgum's pack. He's trying to shape the legislative as well as the executive in his own, basically in his own image. He's a multi-billionaire businessman. Okay. Right. So that's who runs the state. Also, not to mention, he's got a big, one of his big priorities is getting a Theodore Roosevelt presidential library in the state too, by the way. Yeah. That's a big deal too. See, we have priorities, as you can tell. Let's see, what else?
I can just see it now, John. The Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library and the Rough Rider Cafe.
I think there's already one there. It's
of
in Medora,
there
it's a
is.
Small town adjacent to the park. Of course, yeah. Considering this is a guy, Roosevelt was only here like about a year and a half, and things went cut bad. He just went backpacking back east. But somehow they cling to his image. And they even have what they call the Rough Rider Award that they give for a special North Dakota. They've done that. Lawrence Welk, as a matter of fact, got one of those. Give you an idea. Yes, he was from here too. So there's your little trivial note for tonight.
I guarantee you there is not a radio there is not a radio program in American who in America who has heard that bit of information today, John.
Oh, probably not. And on top of that, you can actually see his boyhood home when it opens later in the spring. Okay, that's another thing. So anyway,
well, just to let you know that sort of bullshit faux historiography is not limited to North Dakota. Here in West Virginia, and it's really kind of a cool thing that we actually do this. Every year, all the eighth graders in this state take a test called the Golden Horseshoe, and it's an exam to see just how much you know about West Virginia. And Ferg is, you know, and like less than 1% of the people taking the test get the Golden Horseshoe. Ferg got a Golden Horseshoe. But it's named named after the Golden Horseshoe that was given out by the governor of Colonial Virginia, it was given out by the leader of the expedition. They took off into the wilds of Western Virginia and are credited falsely with sort of discovering West Virginia, which A, didn't need discovering because it had people all over it. White people. And B, they got to the Allegheny front and their indigenous guide said, I ain't going another step further. Them people over that ridge are mean. Which was another way of saying they don't appreciate having shit stolen from them. And so they never actually got into what is physically West Virginia, but we have a Golden Horseshoe Award. So it's kind of like the Rough Rider Award.
Oh, okay. Yeah, same kind of deal. Interesting. Yeah, I like history too. So that's also another thing we have in common as well. And just as an aside, my girlfriend does too. In fact, she teaches it. So this is rather cool. And yes, liberal, and lives in Minnesota. So all good. So getting back to this House race. The person who had the seat got primaried out. Okay. So he's out of a job temporarily. Okay. So come the election, they found another guy to run. But unfortunately, about a month before the election, he died from COVID. Okay. So of course, are you going to vote for the dead guy? Well, it turned out people in that district did vote for the dead guy. He got the most votes. So that went to the then the next day, Governor Burgum decided, I'm going to appoint one of my buddies to this seat. No problem. Oh, no, wait, not so fast. Secretary of State said, no, that's not going to happen. And the Republican committee in that Senate, in that House seat said, no, that's not going to happen either. So it went to the North Dakota Supreme Court, where they actually said, yeah, Governor, no. You can't put your guy. Oh, and by the way, as you would say, he was a friend of Cole. That's right. The guy the governor put in was a friend of Cole. But no. But it turned out the guy that got the seat back was the guy who got primaried out. So he got his seat back. And this is an issue. This is the big whoop-de-doo. Yeah.
That's downright funny.
It is. It's funny, sad, pathetic. And it's all of the above. And like I said, the legislative session might be rather interesting. The governor's supposed to put a budget out there. The session's going to be in January, and we'll just see what happens. That's all we can do. Yeah. Meantime, watching people around here wear masks halfway down their nose, and it's a different deal. I got to admit, I do like the area. I like being in the upper Midwest, even with all the, below zero and stuff. But yeah, politically, kind of scary. But thank goodness I'm not that far from Minnesota, and they're a little more sane.
A little bit. And there's a lot to recommend the area. Kurt speaks glowingly of it.
I will say there's a lot of great places to see in North Dakota. In fact, I will tell you now, this may sound real crazy, but I moved from the Pacific Northwest, which is where I was born and raised. So I'm very familiar with what's in Oregon, Washington. I lived there most of my life. I came to the Midwest. And like you, Bob, I have family in the state that have been here for a long time on my dad's side. So I do have family in North Dakota. But when I got here, I did a lot of traveling around North Dakota, Wisconsin, Minnesota. And like I said, I have a girlfriend now that I travel to see quite a bit. And I see a lot of Minnesota every time I go there. And I love it here. It's great. I wouldn't, right now at this point in my life, I wouldn't go anywhere else. I mean, yeah, will I visit back where I came from? Of course. But to live, no. This is home. Regardless of what, you know, the situations are, you know, whatever it happens to be politically. I mean, you can't just live by politics alone. After all, I mean, this program proves that, you know, sometimes we got to get away from the crazy and talk food porn.
Exactly.
And, you know, cultural thing.
And you've got to find some way to just sort of keep it at arm's length sometimes, because when you're wrapped up in it, it finds a way of being in your face.
This is true. But I'll tell you what, I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up. I'm going to give somebody else a chance, but I figured I'd introduce myself and say hi to everybody.
I'm awfully glad
you did. Yeah. I have one more thought before I go. And it's
sure.
Food related. Now I sent you, and I think I've sent you emails about, it's been a while since I've got the Kaneka sausage. So I'll have to make a run to Grand Forks. That's the only place I can get it, by the way. But there's another sausage, and the thing is, they only ship during the winter, and they're out of Wishek. In fact, I think I still have a couple in the freezer right now. Wishek sausages. There's a place called Stan Supermarket in Wishek, North Dakota. I think Wishek. Yeah, that's what it's pronounced. Wishek. It's a little small town of about maybe 2,000 or 3,000, something like that. And you walk into this store, and the smell just permeates the entire store. The smoked sausage that they make, it's like a 100-plus-year-old recipe. Oh, it's
oh
good.
Wow.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it is really good. And the only time they send them outside of the area is during this time of year, because then you know it's cold enough that it'll get there.
All right, I have to look it up now. How do you spell Wishek?
Wishek. And look for a place called Stan's Supermarket, and they also have other different types of meat, but their sausage is really good. Very tasty.
And there it is. Oh, aren't they pretty?
Oh, they are.
Those look like short links.
They do have the like the kibasa type too also, but they've got all sorts of types different types of meats there. But yeah, but the smoke in there, you just walk in, is like,
it's, well, it's, it should be, it should be cold enough to ship now. I mean, I'm going to have to try this, but
they do.
What do you recommend? Yeah, because they say they've got country style sausage, ring bologna, head cheese, liver sausage, and summer sausage.
I'd go with the summer. I haven't had the head cheese, but the main summer sausage is what you want to get. And it's, oh man, is it good. I mean, actually, I'm going to take a look. I think I've got some in the freezer still. I'm pretty sure it is. It would be the summer sausage. Yeah, I got some Kaneka too. All right, here we go. Here's the Wishek. Here we go. Yeah, just pulled it right out of the freezer as we speak. And of course, being as old as I am, I usually have to wear glasses too. So there's that too. Yay.
Happens.
It does. Yeah. So yeah, the smoked sausage is what you want to get. I happen to have both Kaneka and the Wishek. I have not had them yet.
I definitely got to order me some.
Yeah. Luckily they've got some, smoked country style. Yeah. That's it right there. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah. Those look like little links that might be about the size of a quarter around and, what, maybe?
Yeah, about a quarter round. They're about, yeah, I've got one. This is about a 2 pound or no, a little over a pound package. So yeah, and there's a couple of them and they're really good. I would say, one thing I like about the Kaneka, it's got that nice, you know, that nice smoky flavor to them. Wishek's are pretty, I would say pretty close, and they're very tasty. So I have a feeling you would probably like these too.
It looks fantastic, and it seems very hyper local too.
Oh, very much so. It's been around. These people come from miles to go get there. In fact, I even drove out there myself. That's how I know about the smell of the store. I just happened to be in the area. Just went on a little road trip. Went to a battlefield I went to. stopped at some other places along the way, and then went to Wishek. And the main reason was to go pick up some sausages, and that's what I did.
So what do you serve? Do you just skillet fry them, or how do you serve them?
You can skillet fry them. You can barbecue them. You can pretty much do anything you want with them. Pretty much anything you can do with your with the Kaneka, you can do with these. So yeah, but usually most of the time I usually skillet fry them, but I've also barbecued them too. I mean, you can do pretty much anything. They're delicious.
Oh, they look fantastic. I got to make this happen.
Okay. All right, Bob. Hey, it was good talking to you. Hope everybody is well during the holiday season. If I don't get a chance to chime on in here in the future, and you have a wonderful, you and Agnes and Ferg and everybody in your family have a wonderful evening.
I thank you very kindly, and you do the same. You're in significant at significantly greater hazard than anything we've got going on here. Stay safe. I mean,
well, that's true. I take precautions. Yes, I. Yeah. Granted, it's when I, you know, as far as working every day. Yes, it is. I mean, it's kind of take my chances, but I will tell you. I'll just tell you. I mean, there's teachers that, you know, work full time that are in quarantine right now, and that's part of the reason why I'm able to be able to sub so much. In fact, they're having a hard time trying to find them around here. So I'm able to, you know, pitch in whenever, you know, go in wherever I can. And, you know, do the best I can, but it's happening quite a bit around here. Kids, not so much, but the teachers, yeah, there's quite a few of them that are either home because somebody in their family got sick, or they're sick themselves, you know, who knows. I know, like across the river in Moorhead, they decided to go distance learning only, when that's only just across the Red River. So, yeah, it is different here, but so far, so good.
But you do have to your south. I mean, at this point in time, you know, really, Kristi Noem down in South Dakota is a freaking bioterrorist. I mean, she's awful.
Oh, huge, huge, huge. No, I'll pass on going down there. Luckily, if I do travel, I go to Minnesota. I don't go to South Dakota. No, at least not since, you know, I've been there once, you know, but that was before COVID. Now, no, we're waiting. No, you're right about that. And even some cases, some people would accuse Doug Bergman of that, even though he did say, well, we've got to have a mask mandate, but no, too little, too late. So, but no, Kristi Noem, she's a workhorse case, that's for sure.
I mean, like, that's the thing. Right. Hey, you get all the way up, and you know, look, I got no room to talk. My governor is Make West Virginia Great, big old Governor Jim Justice. But how do you rise all the way to the level of the governor of your state and be as malignantly toxic as a Kristi Noem is? I mean,
probably what her constituents want.
How did she get there?
That's the sad thing. Well, more people voted for her than the other guy.
Well, that's true.
I mean, that sounds trite. That sounds a little trite, but obviously, just like COVID Caligula, how come they voted for him? And because it speaks to a certain group of the electorate that somehow thinks that this is whatever it is that they profess is okay, whether it be Noem, whether it be COVID Caligula, who the hell knows? Unfortunately, we'll probably end up dealing with this for a while. Sure as hell isn't going to go away overnight.
No. No, it's not. But hopefully January the 20th, John, marks at least the beginning of the effort to get this under control.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. And all of us can do our part to try and make it, make it better in our own way, too, which is all, in some ways, sometimes that's all we can do.
Exactly. Exactly. And try to... Because you dealing with kids, if you need to go, that's fine. But I'd like to ask a question.
Oh, no, that's fine. That's fine.
You might have insight that I don't have.
Okay.
Now we got three grandkids and, mm-hmm. you know, like seventh grade, sixth grade and fourth grade or something like that. Maybe eight, seven and five grade.
Right.
And, you know, their entire world has been upended.
And, oh, absolutely.
And to the extent that I was talking, I think it was early last week, about the degree to which we're going to have PTSD care for the healthcare, just for the healthcare workers alone in this country.
Sure.
We always hear that, you know, children are resilient, children bounce back, children can withstand things that adults can't stand, you know, from an emotional standpoint. And I think a lot, I can't help but think that some of that is whistling past a graveyard. We like to think children are more resilient than they are. So my question to you is, how much is it going to take for children to feel okay again when we do get to the point where this is over?
I mean, that's a good question. I will tell you, for example, to be honest with you, Bob, I'm not sure if I could answer that question, since it's, you know, as a substitute, I go to different classrooms all the time and I see various things and catch on to various experiences. But I will tell you, in some of my interactions with, not like, for example, we have video screens where the teacher is teaching from home and I'm in the room, you know, just kind of making sure everything's okay, that the kids are, you know, behaving and all that sort of stuff. And also assisting if they need help, because there, a lot of them are doing stuff on their iPads or Chromebooks and stuff like that. That's what a lot of them are doing right now, even in the classroom. But one thing I noticed, they asked like a class I had today where they said, oh, the kids are asking, do you have the Rona? just throw that out there. I think what I'm seeing is they're, you know, they know it's there. That they ask, sometimes they ask if their teacher has COVID or something like that, because they're concerned, and a lot of them like their teachers and they want them back. So they're kind of aware of it, but I don't see, like, say, at least in my daily interactions, whether they be in person or via video or something like, or, you know, via the video screen or whatever, I'm not seeing that. Again, this is just based on my observations, what I've seen. I don't see like any traumatic response or anything of seeing that these kids aren't normal, except for the fact that, you know, I have to make sure, you know, have them pull the mask up, you know, if they have them down or whatever. Sometimes they wear them under their nose, but it's just little stuff. But I don't see the, like, overall, what do I want to say? I don't see any visible changes in being heard or anything like that, because of the fact we are in this pandemic and that we're having to change. If anything, what's happening is routines that, you know, things that were routine are having to be relearned. That's being done. That's having to be done, as far as, especially with all the kids going back, because most of the time they would take half the kids one day, half the kids another day, and now they're bringing them all back. And so now the routines are going to have to be relearned, and that's been kind of hard. So as far as anything traumatic, it's probably going to be in the long term we're going to find this out. In the short term, I think there's a lot of confusion, a lot of maybe a little bit of uneasiness, and also some concern, especially for the regular teachers that teach them all the time. That's what I'm seeing as I go around to these different classrooms. And on top of that, they're very appreciative when I do show up, as far as being a substitute, whether it be principals, front office people. And these are people I've run into prior to the pandemic, because I was doing that before that also. I'm not seeing the shock or anything, you know, anything like that. I think they're just kind of, they're trying to do the best they can. I mean, I don't see anything visible like that.
So you haven't run across any young scholars yet who say grandma or grandpa has succumbed?
I did have a couple. I didn't ask if it was COVID related, because I think there was one second grader that said that their grandpa had passed away. and she was real sad about it. And we actually happened. Now, I didn't ask what it was from because, you know, as a second grader, and that's the thing too. I'm sensitive to a lot of, you know, what, and this was actually, if you can imagine this, this was a second grade class. It was actually last week that, we were just in a circle. Usually it's very normal to have like a morning meeting with the class to talk about things or have a question to pass around. And this one girl was a second grader that mentioned that her grandpa had passed away. And I said, I'm sorry to hear that. You know, I asked her how she was doing. And she, you know, she told me she didn't say anything about COVID or what happened. We didn't get any details like that, but obviously she was very upset, you know, very sad about it. But I don't know if it was from COVID or not. But I did have that last week. And, yeah. And I even sometimes when I talk to the kids, you know, I said, this is our, you know, this is what we, you know, I kind of generally, you know, make it general. I don't try to pontificate or anything like that, especially with a smaller group of kids. But, you know, well, then, you know, this is just what we have to do right now. But, you know, this won't be forever or anything. You know, try to make them feel better about things as best as possible. You know, something like that comes up. But I think right now, I think a lot of them are just, they're just realizing that this is, you know, this is the way things are right now. And they're just having to, they're doing the best they can.
And so they are proving resilient.
So far. And again, just from my standpoint. Other, you know, there's other people that may think otherwise. But so far they seem to be hanging in there. But again, it depends on what class, depends on the classes. I work mostly elementary, and I do work in special education classrooms as well. And I've done that also. And occasionally in middle and high school as well around the area that I live. But so far I'm finding that so far they're doing okay. Now, granted, there might be some other people that may, you know, say otherwise, but in my experience, so far it's been, you know, it seems to be the norm. You wear your mask, you sanitize, you know, two, three, six times a day or more. They do have the protocols set up in school, and they rigidly enforce those as best as possible.
Well, I've seen some numbers coming out of like the New York City school system where they say that the school system is not the problem, but nonetheless, we're finding, you know, the problem is mass gatherings of adults. Especially if it's mass gatherings of intoxicated adults, or mass gatherings of adults transported in fits of religious ecstasy, so that they sing at the top of their lungs and, you know, spray the virus around the room.
Oh, but of course, yeah, that's the only way to do it. If you're going to do it right, right? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yay religion. Yeah, see, that's another thing I'm not a fan of either, just like yourself. So I'm with you on that one. And even before COVID. So I can understand that. But you know, it's funny. In fact, I even talked with a para actually here recently, whose husband works at a place where most of the younger guys got COVID, but he didn't. So, and this is here in the Fargo area. So, it just depends. It seems like the younger ones don't seem to be, think they're bulletproof. I've heard off and on, you know, going to the bars because the bars are still open. Minnesota's pretty much shut them down except for delivery. Here, no. They've reduced some hours, but part of that's because of staffing. But they've reduced some hours, but you can still go get a drink and go out to eat around here still. You know, some people just don't learn.
And they are lessons, John, that are especially hard learned. And one of the other more sobering statistics is the fact that no, children apparently don't get it as easily. They don't suffer as much from it, generally speaking. But in this country, we have over 1 million children who, in fact, have had it.
Right.
A million kids in the United States. And regardless of how they handle it, that's 1 million children who have been subjected to a deadly virus.
And on top of that, we still haven't, we don't know the long-term effects of this, especially when it, you know, comes to respiratory systems or anything, you know, anything else too. So we have, we're still learning that as well. Or will eventually learn that.
And that's a, and that's well, a, that's a learning curve that may very well be years in the making.
I don't think so.
I mean, I think this
I mask up. But I do mask up. I keep my distance. I, you know, try to, you know, do that as much as possible with the kids. You know, I realize, you know, I realize I know what I'm doing, you know, could be considered dangerous, but it's something I truly enjoy. And there's a need for it. And I'm just one of many that can do it. And I'm not in the high risk group. I consider myself fairly healthy and that I can, that I'm able to capably do this.
Yeah, right. Sausage notwithstanding. Yeah.
This is true.
Everybody's got to have a vice, John.
Well, this is true. This is true.
Well, this has been a fantastic conversation. And don't be a stranger by any stretch of the imagination. And keep us posted because, well, unfortunately, you're out. You are on what constitutes the front lines in the United States. And
that's true. The upper, in the upper Midwest is very heavy with COVID, and even our, you know, our medical personnel are being stretched pretty thin too. So yes, it's,
well, let me ask you this, because I think this will be important too. When do y'all go on Christmas break?
We actually go it's going to be on the 24th. It's only going to be about a week and a half. So we got from about the 24th till I believe the 2nd of January. So it's only about a week and a half this year. It's not going to be very long. It was 2 weeks last year.
With that being the case, then you will probably experience or see some evidence of, or your state will, of what Fauci described as the surge on top of a surge coming out of Thanksgiving.
It's entirely possible, yes. It's entirely possible. You know, keep our fingers crossed. Got to keep those numbers down somehow. And unfortunately, like the whole upper Midwest right now, we're just full of COVID.
That's horrifying to me. I mean.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's me too. And I, most of the time, I don't go out. In fact, I know my girlfriend and I, we live a considerable distance. I mean, not too far. I mean, within reason, but we are still far away. It's not like she's across the river. But we've even decided, you know, just between us, it's like, okay, let's not go out. We'll, you know, get whatever stuff we need, and we'll just, you know, camp out at our respective places to, you know, minimize the risk. You know, and so far that's working. And that works, you know, works for us. Not to mention, like I said, she's a social studies teacher, so we get to pick each other's brains about history. It's a lot of fun. And on top of that, she works on an Indian reservation.
Oh wow!
She's a teacher at on a reservation. Except now she's distance learning as of today at the school she works at, and that's in Minnesota. So yeah, it's things are a little different here. That's for sure. But I love, especially the Friday on the front porch, everybody's contributions and the people that call in. You guys make my day whenever I get a chance to listen to you, and it's wonderful.
Well,
I'm glad that
tickles me to pieces to hear it, because it's, you know, the whole purpose of this entire effort is to create a sense of community where perhaps it didn't exist before.
Well, that you have done and then some. So that's that's great. I'm glad to be a part of it. I've been listening to you for quite a few years. In fact, it was Mike Malloy who had mentioned you, and I thought, okay, we'll check it out. And it's been years. I stopped counting after two or three. Maybe it's been longer, I'm sure. But figure I'd give you a chance to get in here and get my two cents in and introduce myself and just let you know what's up and give you another sausage to check out when you get a chance.
Absolutely, and you got something started too, I should tell you, because Albert wrote in from Rogues Island. Even though he's in Rogues Island, he has considerable time in Texas, and said we need to order up some Chapel Hill sausage from Texas.
They've got a pecan wood smoked one that Albert says is wonderful.
Ooh, so, that does sound good.
Chapel Hill sausage out of Texas.
Chapel Hill sausage, okay.
And it might even be findable. Albert says through Wally World.
Oh, excellent! Yeah, there's some good food and a lot of good stuff. I mean, my intake of walleye has definitely increased because they have walleye around here, of course. There's a lot of good things as far as I'm concerned. I mean, for me, this is home, even though I'm originally closer to where the salmon spawn.
Walleye is beyond a shadow of a doubt for me my favorite freshwater fish.
Oh, they are delicious. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I agree. Now I just have to learn how to catch them in the ice. That's another thing I want to do eventually, too. But right now, it's November, and I guess down to around 10, but it's mild right now. That's even more amazing. We haven't seen below zero yet. Last year we did it this time, but not now. It's been up around 30s, 40s, something like that during the day, and about in the teens overnight, which is for November. Wow, that's mild. If you can believe that.
Well, it's
hardly any snow.
I just put the propane on, and we've got a toasty 56 degrees now here in the studio. So,
oh, very nice. Yeah, I finally turned the heat on over the weekend too, or just a couple days ago, and it's like, oh, okay, all right, this will work. Heck, I have my window open on Saturday. It's like, okay, make up your mind, people. Come on.
Well, when I went out to do the Thanksgiving turkey, I put on my nice waffle weave hoodie. That darn thing was too much, but I don't think that's going to be the case now.
Yeah, it's funny. I was actually with my girlfriend for Thanksgiving. I wore the buffalo plaid flannel shirt, and one of her kids, she has three older children. One of them said, "Oh, you look like you're Northern Minnesota now." Or I said, "Or possibly Pacific Northwest. I can work either way."
plaid, my favorite color.
Exactly. But this one's it's red and white. I guess that's considered buffalo plaid, and that particular plaid pattern is very much Minnesota. I found that out. I didn't know that until that day. So,
well, I think it's a red and black plaid. Stormy Cromer is a fantastically warm hat for those conditions.
Oh yeah, well, they could definitely use that.
Stormycromer.com, Kromer. They're American made, and they're the warmest winter hats you can own. And they're like lifetime guaranteed.
Nice. I'll take a look at that. Chances are I'll probably get some use out of that for sure.
Oh, the nice thing is they've got ear
flaps down.
Instead of like the flop down ear flaps, these just pull down out of the headband, and they're warm.
Oh, nice. Okay. Well, that sounds even better. That'll work. I could definitely get some use out of here in this part of the world. That's for sure.
Oh, they're hugely, they're made in Michigan, and they're hugely popular all across the Northwoods, northern Wisconsin, northern Minnesota, northern Michigan. I imagine there's probably a few folks wearing them in North Dakota too.
It would not surprise me. Pretty much anywhere where the Arctic conditions, hang around 3-4 months out of the year. Yeah, I don't doubt that.
It was my buddy Bruce in Wisconsin, who is the Bruce's Memorial Challenge at the first of every month, who put me onto him.
Okay.
I think he must have had a dozen. He collected them.
Oh, wow. Those must be like good heirloom quality headwear, huh?
Oh, they are. I mean, they last for freaking ever. If you lose them or it gets destroyed, they'll prorate the value and send you a new one. It's a great company, and it's been around since the early 1900s. The Stormy Cromer's wife, he was a minor league ball player who quit so he could marry his wife, Ida. And she wasn't his wife at the time, obviously.
Right.
Her dad said, "No, you can't marry her unless you got a good job." So he got a good job as an engineer on the railroad. And she designed a cap for him because he was forever sticking in the dead of winter. You know, as an engineer, he had to stick his head out the window sometimes to see in the middle of a snowstorm, and his hat would blow away.
Right.
So she took one of his old baseball caps and repurposed it and redesigned it, and history was made.
That's funny, I'm looking at it right now. My goodness, there are some nice ones here. Wow.
And I think there's even a state specific one. You could get a North Dakota Stormy.
Oh, very nice. I will just.
And all of this is, of course, unpaid product placement.
I understand. But as I point and click, choose state options. Oh, I'm looking at the state cap, and sure enough, you can get a Michigan one for UP only.
I keep thinking
for my old home state too.
I keep thinking I want to get a West Virginia one because, you know, we are the most uniquely shaped state in the union.
Yeah, I would agree.
We are the only state whose territorial outline forms an obscene gesture.
Never thought about that before. I may have to take a look at that.
Yeah, turn your right palm towards your face, stick your thumb out, mm-hmm. leave your middle finger extended, and pull the other three fingers down, and you've got the outline of West Virginia.
I'll never think of your home state the same way again. Very nice.
Oh, we gotta have something to make us special.
Oh, I know. Yes, I definitely agree with that. Yeah, that's a pretty cool looking cap. And get one with the UP only. Oh, there you go.
And the one, and they make, one that's lined with Thinsulate that's even warmer. And I've got that one. And I mean, you can, I've had that in 15 below and your head can't get cold.
Yeah, I'm going to have to definitely invest in one of these. That's for sure. Cause there's things I put in my head at 15 below and I'm thinking, okay, this isn't working. But luckily, I don't have too far when I get into the parking lot of any school. I usually don't have to too far to go to get to the front door. So, but still, it's those few feet in between the car and the school that might be kind of bad some days.
Well, it doesn't take long in 15 below, John.
Believe me, I used to live in Montana years ago. In fact, I was stationed in the Air Force in Montana, so I got a crash course in winter there. Believe me, and actually one here too. But I adapted a little bit better, so. I've got that down pretty well.
Well, John, take care of yourself. I don't mean that idly. I mean that very seriously.
I appreciate that, Bob.
And thanks for informing us and keep us informed, please.
You got it. You have a great night, Bob. Appreciate it.
Happy holidays. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Happy holidays to you too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That's John calling from North Dakota. We now have the North Dakota perspective to end the month of November. Thank you, John. Thank you very kindly. And do stay safe. He's doing a hero's work. Thank you very kindly to Benjamin. And thank you to Jude at Women's Standing. Let's see. That takes us down to $30 to go on Chris's Memorial Challenge, Chris's Memorial Fuck 2020 Challenge in memory of our dear feline friend, Mike. Thank you, Chris, and thank you to Benjamin. Thank you, Jude. Thank you to everybody who has jumped in on that. It is much appreciated, and we will remember Mike fondly. Lee in New York, waffle weave hoodie, Bob. How much of your clothes doubles as food porn? Yeah, there's always a food porn reference, isn't there? But this is a... It's like it's a Chinese knockoff of a Carhartt hoodie, which probably made in China too now. But damn, it's warm, and it came in handy today. Breaking news, courtesy of Sparky and David in South Carolina, Stan, and. Matt in San Francisco, Scott Atlas resigns. Yeah,
Matt in San Francisco noting, I wonder if it was a live boy or a dead girl. I guess time will tell. Lord knows enough death can already be tracked to his brilliant advice. Yeah, it would be well if the Scott Atlases of the world and the David Samadis of the world would just go somewhere and do no harm, but that first tenet of the Hippocratic Oath, I guess, is a little too much to ask. But Andy Slavitt over on Twitter said, if I hear the name Scott Atlas again in 20 years, it'll be too soon. Yeah. And Shorty in L.A. with a note for John. You better keep phoning in. I haven't been home too long, but this brother better keep calling in. Yes, I said brother. Anybody who phones into the horn, it's family automatically, and it's the only news I get from the Midwest. So, John, you are much appreciated by Shorty in L.A. Let's see. More in news. You remember last week when Amy COVID Barrett trended on social media, and she will be Amy COVID Barrett forevermore after that ridiculous Supreme Court opinion that put the tender fifis of the religion industry ahead of the health and well-being of we the people trying to form that more perfect union without dying of a preventable virus. Well, the Archbishop of New York, Cardinal Timothy Dolan, it got all worked up and taught and said to our churches are essential. I'd like to congratulate the Brooklyn Diocese on their victory for religious freedom in the U.S. Supreme Court. Our churches are essential, and we have to preserve religious liberty. Sit, liberty, sit. So it's not enough that they get to poison and kill Americans. They're bragging about it, too. But what I find interesting out of this is that on Thursday, almost as if he had a heads up or something, on Thursday this past, the New York Times published an op-ed from none other than Pope Frank, who offered some sympathy. You know, this was the day after that hateful Supreme Court opinion. And he related the story of how at the age of 21, he lost a lung or part of a lung as a young man in Argentina. And he said, when I got really sick at the age of 21, I had my first experience of limit, of pain and loneliness. It changed the way I saw life. For months, I didn't know who I was or whether I would live or die. The doctors had no idea whether I'd make it either. I remember hugging my mother and saying, just tell me if I'm going to die. I have some sense of how people with COVID-19 feel as they struggle to breathe on a ventilator. And he went on to mention a pair of nurses, Cornelia and Michaela, who cared for him during his convalescence. And he said, they taught me what it is to use science, but also to know when to go beyond it to meet particular needs. And the serious illness I lived through taught me to depend on the goodness and wisdom of others. And so he called upon people. And like I said, this is odd, given that Cardinal Dolan felt the need to brag. And one of his own flock, or, well, four members of his own flock, you know, Slappy and Tony Bad Breath and Brat and Justice Handmaid, they put us all at hazard with their ruling, putting, you know, churches ahead of the human beings that a church is supposed to serve. And this almost seems a shot across the Roman Catholic Supreme Court's bow. Because he said, looking to the common good. And listen, I know the Roman Catholic Church, the Pope, all is horribly problematic, misogynistic, etc. And I'm not overlooking that. But I'm just dealing with this particular issue. He wrote in the Times, looking to the common good is much more than the sum of what is good for individuals. It means having a regard for all citizens and seeking to respond effectively to the needs of the least fortunate. And talking about the petulant babies who complain about wearing a mask, he had written previously in a book called Let Us Dream, you'll never find such people protesting the death of George Floyd or joining a demonstration because there are shanty towns where children lack water or education. They turned into a cultural battle what was in truth an effort to ensure the protection of life. Now, I gotta presume that people like Tony Bad Breath and Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can, Slappy Thomas, and Brat, and Justice Handmaid look at the New York Times from time to time. And I imagine they're the kind of weirdo, bizarro Catholics, you know, think the Mass should still be done in Latin and all that crap. They probably despise Pope Frank. But he's doing a better job of representing the spirit of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, than any of those four religious maniacs. No, it's not Wednesday, and I'm not turning it into that, but isn't that curious that the New York Times was ready to run with that op-ed on the Thursday, hours after, at about 6 minutes to midnight on this past Wednesday, Justice Handmaid and the rest of the theocrats, otherwise known as the Republicans on the court, minus John Roberts. Isn't it weird that they were ready to roll with that? It's a brilliant piece of trolling on the part of Pope Frank, if in fact that's how it worked out. Oh, and by the way, because it's more end Monday, and because there is no end of stupidity on things like more end Monday, news out of, and I'm slowly remembering to pronounce it as such, news out of Ohio. Republicans in the legislature, in the state House of Representatives, have filed articles of impeachment against Republican Governor Mike DeWine. No shit, really. A maggot member of the state House, representing John Becker of Claremont County, and a guy we've heard of before, representing Nino Vitale. Now, Nino Vitale was the one who said that you can't wear no mask because then Jesus can't see you. As well as Candace Keller and Paul Zeltwanger. Yeah, you go to the Zeltwanger cutoff and you get out of your car and cut off your Zeltwanger. Sorry, that never gets old. Bless Johnny Carson's soul, wherever it may be or not be. They filed 12 articles of impeachment against Governor Mike DeWine, saying, we are trying to restore the rule of law. And in these 12 articles of impeachment, they accuse Governor DeWine of mismanagement, malfeasance, misfeasance, abuse of power, and other crimes include but are not limited to meddling in the conduct of a presidential primary election. Huh? Trump won Ohio, for fuck's sake. Meddling in the conduct of a presidential primary election, arbitrarily closing and placing curfews on certain businesses while allowing other businesses to remain open. Mm-hmm. In short, they claim that Mike DeWine should be impeached and removed from office because he issued a stay-at-home order to keep people in Ohio from dying of the Rona. And because he issued a mask mandate, he promoted fear, turns neighbors against neighbors, and contracts the economy by making people fearful to leave their homes. Funny, I don't think it's the mask mandate and the stay-at-home order that makes people fearful of leaving their homes. It's the possibility of dying from a preventable virus. Mm-hmm. Now, I guess the good side of this is that there are more... Well, I hesitate to use the word sane and Republican in the state in the same sentence, but Mike DeWine will probably be thoroughly supported by the Democratic minority in the House, and there will probably be enough Republicans there to refuse to join in and flush their own careers down the toilet to keep these articles of impeachment from going anywhere. But apparently, it's going to be big. For the maggots in Claremont County and wherever the hell Nino Vitale and Candace Keller and Paul Zeltwanger, go to the Zeltwanger cutoff and get out of your car and cut off your Zeltwanger. Sorry, you got to do it twice. I guess they think it's going to help them with the maggots. Yeah, Mike DeWine wasn't putting up with any bullshit. He's not a great guy. He's got a history. I remember how he looked the other way when a little girl was raped drugged, roofied, whatever, and raped at a party several years ago when he was, I think, Attorney General of Ohio. Yeah. But nonetheless, he wasn't putting up with their crap. He said, as governor, my priorities are to keep people safe and to get our economy moving faster. If there are others in the legislature who want to spend their time drawing up resolutions and filing articles, I'd just say to them, have at it. So it's going nowhere. On the other hand, though, it may very well be a different story. In neighboring Michigan, where at least one county there approved a resolution in county government to support the impeachment of Governor Gretchen Whitmer because she wouldn't let us mow our snow last March. Wrong accent, I know, but still. But it's a reminder that if we are to survive this pandemic, that by God, we will do it in spite of and not with the assistance of way too many of our fellow country persons. Because, well, you know, morons. Kind of calls for a little reminder.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Precisely. And what an uphill battle that is. Oh, and by the way, anybody wanting to check out the sausage that John was talking about, Wishek, W-I-S-H-E-K sausage, Wishek sausage. It's at wishecksausage.net. Via Stan's Supermarket of Wishick, North Dakota. I'm going to order me some. And so, one last moron nomination. And by the way, we have $30 to go on Chris's Fuck 2020 challenge in memory of her beloved feline friend, Mike, who crossed the Rainbow Bridge today, kidney failure. And Chris put that out there just as a way of remembering her cat, Mike, and
Well, offering up a middle finger at the bullshit nightmare that 2020 has been. So there were arguments in the Republican-controlled Supreme Court. I don't give a damn what that person on 2A or 1A said. I mean conservatives. No, they're Republicans. Unless instead of Republican, you wanted to say fascist. And I don't think that was the case. There were arguments on yet another Trump lawsuit about the census in this case, and whether or not to let Donald J. Trump engage in rampant, pernicious racism in how we count people in the country. And I guess you could say that Sammy Bad Breath shoot the black kid in the back of the head at 30 paces, even though he's running away and doesn't have a weapon, Alito, is feeling his oats. John Roberts, old balls and strikes himself, is the Chief Justice of the court. And one of the things that the Chief Justice does is to control the flow of a hearing. So in this case, Sammy Bad Breath was questioning Barbara Underwood, who is the Solicitor General for the state of New York. And when you consider the content of Sammy Bad Breath's speech saying that religious liberty is under attack when it isn't. I mean, as long as there's a church on every other corner in the United States of America, I think we can safely say that religion is in fairly good shape. But Alito was questioning Barbara Underwood about documents supporting census numbers. And so that's where we pick up the conversation.
Thank you. I have two questions that are important to me. I hope I'm going to be able to squeeze them both in my time.
So he already knows that he's got limited time, but he's got two questions, Sammy Bad Breath does.
First, concerns your answer that it would be fine for the Secretary of Commerce to submit numbers that exclude illegal aliens if it was done in a separate document. Once you can see that.
Now, note, Sammy Bad Breath is still using the ancient and now recognized as thoroughly bigoted and repulsive phrase, illegal aliens, not undocumented immigrants. So you know where his head is at. He's a bigot. He's a xenophobe. He's a racist. Now, I'm pretty sure that the last name Alito is not an old Cherokee name. But nonetheless, I guess his ancestors got here and he spent his time stomping the hands on the rungs of the ladder below him. Illegal aliens.
Unless you are asking us to overrule what Franklin said about the president's directing the secretary to reform the census, then I don't really understand where your argument is going. Suppose the tables were turned. Suppose the president wanted to count every single person who was in the United States on Census Day, but the Secretary of Commerce took it upon himself to give the president numbers that excluded every illegal alien.
That's twice.
Do you think the president would then be unable to direct the Secretary of Commerce to reform those numbers and make them comply with the theory that the president accepted?
Well, what he's describing is theory, and this is where you learn a little bit more about the fascist nature of Sammy Bad Breath Alito, is that we count everybody in the country in the census. That's why, for instance, we have that hateful, pernicious old three-fifths clause that's still right there in the body of the Constitution. Now, it was remedied by the 14th Amendment. But the fact is, the language is still there in the main body of the Constitution that, for census purposes, slaves would be counted as three-fifths of a human being. And that is because you count, and they certainly weren't citizens. And as far back, as far as up to the Dred Scott decision, Justice Roger Taney, who's hopefully been getting a reverse pineapple in hell since he shuffled off this mortal coil. Lincoln wanted to stick him in prison, or threatened to. But Taney said that no man of color, because remember, women still didn't count back then. No man of color, no one in the United States was bound to treat any man of color, free or slave, as a citizen with the full panoply of a citizen's rights. That's in Dred Scott. So, without a doubt, the law of this land is that we count every person in the country, citizen or otherwise. Because that's the only way you find out what the population of your country is, which is the primary purpose of the census. But instead, Alito twists it to make it sound like that's just a theory.
The president would, under Franklin, have the ability to direct a reformation of the census. There would be a different question. There's always the question whether that reformation is constitutional or not.
Yeah, well, that goes to the substance of the issue, which I do want to get to. But if the once you concede that two documents are possible and that the president can ask the secretary to reform the numbers that are sent to him, I don't understand why there isn't why the situation where both sets of figures are submitted in a single document is any different. It seems like a totally meaningless formality.
It's not a meaningless formality in the sense that this is the moment in the process when judicial intervention can operate. The problem arises because once because of the reluctance of the court to enjoin the president. So the injunction operates against the secretary and what he can transmit, and then the president, and in telling the secretary what he can put in the 141 report, the court will also be telling the president what is lawful to use in his report to Congress.
And I know that sounds like legal gobbledygook, but what she's saying makes sense. But it's what happens next that makes this kind of an interesting moment.
What he can put in the 141 report, the court will also be telling the president what is lawful to use in his report to Congress.
Justice Sotomayor?
If I can move on to my second.
So you heard that. Chief Justice Roberts said, Justice Sotomayor, as in it's time, it's your turn. But Sammy Alito, flush from his recent religious bigotry tour and thrilled to have subjected people in New York to horrifying risks from the coronavirus. Well, Sammy Bad Breath just blazes ahead.
I want to give you six categories of people and ask you to answer yes or no to the extent you can, whether you think each of these people in each of these categories must be counted for apportionment purposes. First category is a foreign diplomat who was posted here for 3 years.
No, because he's, for several reasons, because
okay,
he's...
Okay, well, then he's a no. All right. A tourist who's here on a valid visa.
No.
A tourist who overstays her visa and is therefore here illegally.
Well, that person is now outside the realm of we expect them to leave, and so that person is a resident like any other undocumented person.
Justice Sotomayor? Sotomayor?
General, I see this as being very similar to Franklin, because I think you're...
Which is, okay, that, but it shows, I think there's a bit of a palace coup going on inside. The Supreme Court. The religious zealot majority now knows that they can have their way anytime they want to. And that was a not so subtle fuck you to old Balls and Strikes Roberts, especially because he wanted to call on a woman. Watch this space, as the saying goes. Uh-oh, I've gotten on the wrong side of Darlene. Seriously, Bob, give Pope Frank credit? Respectfully, and maybe I'm being cynical because I'm on the shitty end of his misogyny along with being a recovering Catholic until I spiral off this mortal coil. But reading between the lines, I see Pope Frank's recollection as a subtle admission that he wouldn't get it or understand what it's like to be extremely ill and dependent on science and doctors without having gone through it himself. I suppose that's a valid way of looking at it. And I think in many ways, Darlene, it reflects a lot of what's wrong in this country right now. There were people who traveled all over this country during Thanksgiving because the coronavirus had not become real, has not become real for them in any way, save for, in any way, shape, form, or fashion, except for the fact that they have been a little bit inconvenienced. And I think that's in human nature. Some people are incapable of empathy. And as I noted, you know, before I said anything else about Pope Frank, I said taking all of the failings of his religion and the misogyny and everything as read, that I found it a curious, if that is what indeed it was, bit of trolling on his part. That's the part I give him credit for. But Darlene says, in other words, he couldn't have cared less otherwise. Maybe I should cut him some slack. Maybe he's a work in progress. I think we all are. But I'd love to see if Pope Frank puts his money where his mouth is and threatens to excommunicate the Catholic justices for their ignorant decision last week that will most certainly cost human lives. I don't think that's going to happen. Damn, it would be fun if it did. Darlene noting, I mean, wasn't Hillary Clinton threatened with excommunication because of her stance on a woman's right to choose? It was either Pope John Paul II or Benny the Ratzinger. But Hillary's not Catholic, is she? No. Because God knows if she was, we would have heard about that nonstop during 2016 forever and anon. The Pope doesn't have, I guess he could excommunicate, but... No, it was John Kerry they went after with such verve in 2004. Oh, John Kerry's not welcome to take Holy Communion in my diocese. That was all over the place. Just saying, Darlene says, I don't see a difference. P.S. Yeah, heard the Alito BS today and the Alito Roberts kerfuffle. Alito's a POS and is feeling his new position of power on the SCOTUS. He's blowing off C.J. Roberts. Damn. John Roberts sure is missing RBG big time right now. I think that almost goes without saying. Thanks, Darlene. And so, here we are. In the holiday season,
And it's time for the annual unveiling of the Christmas decorations that Melanoma Trump doesn't give a fuck about. That's not me saying that. She said that. I mean, really, who gives a fuck about Christmas? Fuck those little children. Yeah. So today, via her official FLOTUS account, which won't be hers for very much longer, she unveiled, apparently having learned a little bit of a lesson from previous years, she unveiled her America the Beautiful Christmas at the White House. And let's see, there's a picture of Melanoma in a black pencil skirt with what appears to be a gold blouse. Standing next to a table with an electric train on it. And instead of like a little train station or a bridge or any of that cool stuff that Gomez Adams had, it's just an electric train with a whole bunch of wreathy greenery around it. And she's looking at it as if she's saying to herself, I wonder how many children kidnapped by my husband are on this train. But as opposed to the scary, terrifying forest of horrors from a year or so past, this year we've actually got color. There's Melanoma again. No blood red trees, no white trees. She must not have had much to do with it, but they've got trees decorated all in red. They've got trees decorated in gold and white. And then there's a sort of hallway of potted evergreen-looking stuff, and her heading down it like a runway model. It didn't work out well for Melanoma. People replying with things like a gif of Larry David saying no one gives a fuck, or the quote from her pal's tell-all book, I'm working my ass off. That Christmas stuff that you know, who gives a fuck about Christmas stuff and decorations, but I need to do it, right? And then they say, oh, what about the children that they were separated? Give me a fucking break. Yeah. Jesus, won't it be nice when her husband goes to live at Mar-a-Lago and she gets to go back and live in that tacky Baroque penthouse in New York City? Because at least she's not under investigation by the Southern District of New York and the District Attorney of Manhattan. Who gives a fuck about Christmas stuff and decorations? Classy. Jude says it looks like they brought in former First Lady Michelle Obama to do some of the decorating. No blood red trees. It would be an improvement. Darlene pointing out, Melanoma did do better with the Christmas decor this year. Except that one area that was draped in blood last year still looked as cold as she is. And there was another hallway that I swear was out of the Wizard of Oz, and that long hallway to the Wizard in the Emerald City. Oh, if only she'd been wearing ruby slippers, and I don't mean Dorothy. Remember, Dorothy got them from the Wicked Witch of the East. Yeah. So we've got holiday trains. That's just fun. New York Botanical Garden has a holiday train show. I love model trains. So we'll save a little bit for Titanic Tuesday.
By the way, Dr. Bill has a conversation with his good friend Dr. Kevin Shanley tomorrow on U.S.-China relations. Should be a good one. They always are when those two get together. Again, a reminder, I'll be filling in for Malloy tomorrow evening. Hope you'll be around for that. And there is $30 remaining on Chris's Fuck 2020 challenge in memory of her beloved cat, Mike. So if someone meets that, then we will be, I will be able to tell Chris that her challenge was fully met, and she'll be gratified to know that. Arnold, earlier this evening, saying, I'm sorry for Chris's loss. She's another, Chris is another horn superstar, and that she is. So thanks, everybody. Time for me to check in on Agnes and the puppy sitting, grand puppy sitting. Thanks, everybody, for keeping this program on the air with your kind PayPal, Patreon subscriptions, your a la carte contributions during the course of the program through a variety of means, post office, Venmo, PayPal. Thank you. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatsoever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve from Georgistan. That's Brother Deacon Steve from Georgistan in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. New Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is at HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. Okay, late breaking cowbell to Brian. Brian says, Bob! Melanoma can get on that train and go now. Yeah, straight out of Shakespeare. Hey, Melanoma, stand not upon the order of your going, but go at once. Indeed. Thanks, Brian. And always, Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe, everybody. There is a surge coming on top of a surge. And we want everybody right here when it's over. We can begin to see the flickering glimpse of some light at the end of a very Trumpy tunnel. Let's take care and be part of the recovery. Not just an economic recovery, but a recovery in spirit, a recovery in decency. Let's be that. Best way to stay safe is to stay home. If you cannot, and there are many of us who for a variety of reasons can't, then take every precaution you can when you go out. Wear your mask. Wash your hands frequently. Don't touch your face. Carry hand sanitizer with you everywhere I go. I saw little pocket-sized bottles of hand sanitizer with Baby Yoda on it. Baby Yoda, whose name we now know. I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but we now know Baby Yoda's name. Yoda, Y-O-D-A, Yoda, yo-yo-yo-yo-yoda. Okay, no more singing. Maintain your social distance. If it's somebody with a mask, 10 feet's good. God, I was in Wally World today, and I had to plow through a gaggle of gabbling hillbillies just to get to the checkout. Excuse me. Right. If they're not wearing a mask, don't get within 30 feet of them. Stay out of that place if they won't enforce masks. For God's sakes, if somebody comes toward you babbling about how we're all gonna feel stupid because we tried to keep ourselves and our loved ones from getting the Rona. Avoid that person like the plague, because they are. Hey, got in very nearly a 3-hour program, so that being late thing wasn't so awful after all. Thanks, everybody. Later.